Welcome to Monday Night Live. The wind may be whistling around the streets of Kalamazoo, bringing winter in for the first time this year. But here in the Access studio, we have these wonderful lights. We're warm, we're relaxed. We're looking forward to the week's festivities, and I mean that. Wonderful things are going to be happening in the next few days in Kalamazoo. And we're going to be talking to two of the key people in the Festival of Sacred Music in just a moment. As usual, however, before I introduce our guests, one or two thoughts for you to hold on to. The Bible has a story about the hunter who settled for the night and lit a fire and was afraid and took a piece of wood and carved for himself an image so he felt safer with a god of his own creation. And then in the morning, of course, he got up and he carried his image away with him. You probably remember the film with Tom Hanks, Castaway. And there was the Bible story all over again. Tom Hanks, I think, cut his hand and had some kind of a ball, a basketball or a soccer ball. And there was the imprint of his hand on that ball. And it was stuck on a stick and became an image, became something he could worship in a way for the rest of the movie. Took it back to real life when he was rescued, when he was found. Mythology. People from the very beginning of time have needed to look outside themselves, find something beyond the everyday, and mythology develops. And a number of years ago, the late Joseph Campbell had a wonderful interview with Bill Moyers on public television. The book, the series had the same title, The Power of Myth. And there's a book which captures more or less everything that was in the public television series. And one page I thought might be worth quoting. They're talking about myths, they're talking about religions. Campbell says, brotherhood. In most of the myths I know, it's confined to a bounded community. In bounded communities, aggression is projected outward. For example, the Ten Commandments say, thou shalt not kill. Then the next chapter says, go into Canaan and kill everybody in it. That's a bounded field. We're in this particular religion. We're in this particular myth. Brotherhood exists there, but beyond, everyone is fair game. And what our friend Campbell says is, the problem is, we now need a myth for the planet. And there isn't a planetary myth. He says the nearest thing we have to it is Buddhism. Because the Buddhists see the Buddha in every one of us, in every living being. So maybe the closest thing we come to having a planetary myth is Buddhism. We still need that rounded thing. And this week in Kalamazoo, we're going to be celebrating sacred music from many faiths right here. It's going to be an exciting hour. Please stay with us because this is an important subject for this time in the planet, not just in Kalamazoo. Now we'll have probably a broad shot and I can introduce our mystery guests who were hiding in the dark for a while. It really is a pleasure to introduce you. Let me first of all make sure I get the names right.
Okay.
And then we can talk a little bit about yourself before we talk about the festival.
Okay.
And we start, Rohan, with the ladies, of course, always.
Sure.
That's, you know, an old kind of...
Yeah, age too, you know.
Oh, let's not go there. Dr. Elizabeth Start. May I call you Elizabeth?
Sure.
But we have to, from time to time, we'll flash up Dr. Okay. Elizabeth Start. You're Executive Director of the Michigan Festival of Sacred Music. So you are the boss of the festival.
Yep.
What you say goes.
Well, I do have a board.
You have a board.
That I answer to. And I do have a program committee that helps in the initial programming.
I'm being facetious.
Okay,
I didn't mean you were a bossy person.
I do say, nobody can touch me,
You do need a guiding light particularly in a complicated festival like this. There's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on, yeah.
And then across the table from me, Rohan Krishnamurthy.
Mm-hmm.
Did I get anywhere close to the pronunciation?
Pretty close, yeah. Krishnamurthy.
Okay. May I call you Rohan?
Sure.
Thank you. That saves my blottis or whatever.
Okay.
You are going to be part of the festival.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about you first, and then we'll come back to Elizabeth.
Okay.
You're part of the festival because you are a student, a senior at Kalamazoo College.
Correct.
And double major.
Mm-hmm. I'm double majoring in music and chemistry, and I'm actually coordinating the program on November 11th, that is Sunday, and this is sort of a music and dance collaboration featuring two of these artistic traditions from southern India, the music and dance traditions.
Tell us how you got to Kalamazoo. Tell us a bit about yourself. Don't be shy.
Okay.
You don't have to reveal anything with which you feel uncomfortable, but you weren't born in Kalamazoo.
I wasn't born in Kalamazoo. I was actually born in California, and I moved here when I was around four. But I'm, for the most part, a product of Kalamazoo. I've gone to school completely here in Kalamazoo. I'm a graduate of Kalamazoo Central and the Math and Science Center. And I've been a student at Kalamazoo College for the past 3 years. And as you mentioned, I'm a senior there, double majoring in music and chemistry. So that's just a little bit about my background and what I've been doing here at Kalamazoo. But obviously, I've also been pursuing music alongside my academics. And I've been specializing in percussion for about the past 10 years. So how I began learning this instrument, which is not the usual percussion that most
people know.
The murdungam, correct?
Murdungam.
Yeah.
I'll get it right.
Sure. It's which is an ancient South Indian drum, is a bit unconventional in that I first started taking lessons from a graduate student at Western 10 years ago who had training in this art form of South Indian percussion. And I learned from him for about 2 months, after which he received a job transfer to Massachusetts. And since there were no other murdungam instructors within a 300-mile radius of Kalamazoo, which is still the case, we continued lessons over the speakerphone, which is really the only option at the time. And though it was unconventional, it actually worked out quite well. And within a year of training over the speakerphone, I was in a position to begin performing. And since then, I've been performing in several venues in the U.S., Canada, and in India. And I've been performing in India for about the past nine consecutive years.
Hmm.
So I've had a wonderful opportunity to perform. And I also enjoy teaching. I have an Indian percussion ensemble at Kalamazoo College, which gathers about a dozen students every quarter. So this is something that we really enjoy at Kalamazoo College, and we also attract members from Western and just general community members as well for that. You might know about the Indian Classical Music Lecture and Performance Series at Kalamazoo College, which also attracts guest artists and scholars for lectures and performances at Kalamazoo College.
Your president will be our guest in 2 weeks' time.
Okay.
So I can check all this out with her.
Sure, sure.
And I can certainly ask about that field of studies. I knew nothing about it.
Definitely. I think she'll have plenty to say about it.
One of the objectives of Monday Night Live
mm-hmm.
is to let people, not just in Kalamazoo, but in Portage, because it goes out in Portage probably next week.
Sure.
The people who hear about it in Portage will have missed the festival because that's this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But the objective of this program is really to let people know the treasures we have in this area. You know, very often people just don't realize what is beneath their feet at their fingertips.
Mm-hmm.
Having a teacher who, how many miles away?
Yeah, I mean, he was initially here in Kalamazoo.
Oh,
but
he was here.
Yeah, but I guess a lot of people probably didn't know that there was an instructor in town, but I happened to chance upon him at that time. And again, such a dedicated teacher to who was even willing to continue lessons over the speakerphone when
yes,
he was all the way in Massachusetts.
Don't be shy.
Mm-hmm.
You go back to India,
mm-hmm.
where all this started.
Mm-hmm.
How do you match up to the people over there who've been doing this since they were babies, perhaps?
Well, that's a tough question, although I think I got a fairly early start as well. Started when I was 8.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess that's really not a question for me to address directly. But I have been going there, and I've had the opportunity to perform with several leading artists in India as well.
Reading between the lines, this means he is very good.
Yes, I think he's won a couple of competitions there.
He wouldn't be invited back second time if he didn't hold his own over there. That's interesting to know.
Right, so it's a nice opportunity to go back and see how things are going on, as you said, sort of in the source of South Indian music.
In terms of a future career, again, I'm prying, and if you tell me to shut up, I'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
Music or science, is it an either or?
That's a good question. That's something that I'm really grappling with at the moment as well. But I have been pursuing the arts and sciences in parallel pretty much since middle school. And at this point, I think I'm most interested in actually pursuing the music at a professional level. So my next step would most likely be a graduate program, a master's, PhD program, most likely in ethnomusicology, which is sort of the study of world music.
World music.
Mm-hmm.
So again, we're coming back to the theme we'll probably explore in the rest of the program,
mm-hmm.
of, you know, when we talk about music, we're talking about a common language.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It crosses linguistic boundaries and faith boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Sure.
The spotlight is on you, Elizabeth.
Okay.
How did you, tell us a bit about yourself. Where did it all start?
Well, actually in Kalamazoo. I'm also a Kalamazoo product. We went to the same junior high school and high school. So, and my father taught at Kalamazoo College and was actually a philosophy professor, but also an ordained minister, and was very interested in comparative religion courses. Those were some of his more popular courses, comparative philosophy. And I just grew up with this interest in looking at the parallels and the things that are similar between the religions. And I'm a cellist initially, though I also, it's funny listening to Rohan, because when I was in high school and college, I was doing both math and music as well. And when it wasn't until I was well into college that I kind of went straight for music. But there's always been a technical side. I've done recording techniques. I've done electronic music composition, things like that. I've studied acoustics, which of course is something that Rohan's been involved in with his new design of his drum too. So
we've got something going here. Peg, who's behind that camera, teaches at the Math and Science Center.
She does. Mm-hmm.
And is a musician. So are we talking about the same side of the brain? Is there some wiring involved here? If you can cope with the difference between one and three, can you cope with the difference between do, la, so? I mean, is it, we don't need to go there.
I don't know. A lot of people have written about that. And
I think if I could answer that question, I wouldn't have to go to grad school.
Oh, you have to go to grad school. Well, thank you very much. Now, let's switch to the main topic for the night and make sure I get it right. It is the 4th Michigan Festival of Sacred Music.
Right.
And it's going to start on, well, it's already started to some extent. I know various events have taken place.
Well, our fringe events are actually starting up tomorrow. So,
okay.
But we're already scurrying about getting things ready. And the festival itself starts Thursday with the opening ceremony of the Tibetan monks and their sand painting. But
we need to say this kind of thing repeatedly. We'll remind mm-hmm. people that it starts on Thursday at noon mm-hmm. and what have you as we go along, because not everybody, this will shock you, I know, not everybody watches the full hour.
Mm,
this
okay.
wonderful thing, the remote control, means that some people take 5 minutes here, some stay mm-hmm. for the full hour. But we'll, don't be afraid to butt in and say, Keith, we haven't said Thursday at noon, it starts yeah. in the public museum.
Okay. Well, I don't want people to miss, though, that Wednesday night there will be a wonderful event that the Kalamazoo Shape Note Singers will be doing at First Presbyterian Church. There's a wonderful documentary called Awake My Soul, which is about the shape note singing tradition, the sacred harp tradition, and they're showing that and doing a workshop in sacred harp singing, and that's one of our free events. We have a lot of free events in the festival. I remember trying to make the festival start on Thursday, and then we just kept getting more and more fringe stuff. And,
please, could I?
Yeah, just more and more involvement in the community.
It's
so it's
good
great.
To know we got a fringe.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, let's go back again, because you've shuffled from you.
Mm-hmm.
You studied math, you studied music.
Mm-hmm.
Your doctorate is?
In music composition from the University of Chicago. And I also have performing degrees in cello, math degrees. Have taught a number of colleges in the Chicago area, DePaul University and Columbia College, and freelancing as a cellist all the time as well. And though I'm in Kalamazoo now, I still go back and perform in Chicago and am actually working with the Chicago Composers Consortium as well. So keeping busy in all aspects of music.
You sleep just about 4 hours a night, I suspect.
If the cats let me, yeah.
At the moment. Okay, now, when did it all begin? This is the fourth festival.
Mm-hmm.
So it began 2000 and so?
2001 was the first festival. They were planning it in 2000. It does take us a couple years to get everything
mm-hmm,
in place.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually the idea of Dr. Wenqiao Chen, who was a professor at Kalamazoo College, retired, and he just thought it would be a good way to involve the community and bring the community together with music.
And as far as I can see, I went to your website, and
mm-hmm.
we'll flash up the website
from
time to time. That's a very interesting website, all kinds
mm-hmm.
of information on it.
Oh, thank you.
It sounds as if from the very beginning, this idea of ecumenical mingling,
mm-hmm.
we need to bring in Presbyterians. I think it started, didn't it, in the Baptist Church? That's where the discussions took.
Yeah.
But now we have programs in the Baptist Church, in the Presbyterian Church,
mm-hmm.
the Congregational Church, the Congregation of Moses.
Right.
So we're bringing in these, I was going to say local faiths, I didn't
mm-hmm.
mean that,
yeah.
different denominations. But you're reaching out beyond.
Yeah, well, I think that the downtown churches especially, you know, look at how they participate in New Year's Fest. They're interested in doing things that bring the community together. And the fact that those are our venues it makes it seem more Christocentric, as they used to say in the festival. But it's just that these are people who are involved, and these are great places, great venues for our events.
Yes.
And also, if you look at our schedule, things are so close together that it's really nice to be able to walk from one building to the next, and then you can see everything rather than having to get in your car and drive over to some other place.
So it's still basically a downtown event,
yeah,
but it's global in its reach. These are not the days to talk about crusades, are they? I think Bill Moyers and Campbell had something important. We need a global, a planetary myth. We need something that goes beyond particular faiths.
Yeah.
And there's so many of these have things in common. And yet sometimes we fight over just a minute.
Mm-hmm.
I think the difference between the Catholic Church and the Orthodox Church is minute.
Mm-hmm.
The filioque clause or something like that.
Yeah.
And because of this, we say, you're outside. You're not in our brotherhood circle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we can't do that these days, can we? Rohan, I mean, what do the people in India feel about Christocentric?
That's a pretty big question, but I guess I'd speak on behalf of musicians in that I think for many of us, our religion really is the music, the art, and what, at least for me, allows me to reach out to other faiths and other cultures is really my music and the ability for the music to bridge these cultural gaps, so to speak. And I've, again, had wonderful opportunities to attempt that initiative at a variety of venues, both here in the U.S. and in India.
Yes. So we're not just going to, I was going to say subject.
Mm-hmm.
No, we're not going to subject our audiences to
mm-hmm.
music. We're not just going to entertain our audiences.
Right.
We're not just going to teach them something about other kinds mm-hmm. of sacred music. Are we going to give them a spiritual experience?
I think so. The music that we have, it's all very high quality in its genres and in its faith traditions. It's a wide variety of things. We have actually a radio music drama We have, of course, Rohan's work with the South Indian music and dance, the Tibetan monks, Kalamzu Singers, Kalamzu Children's Chorus will be giving us a wonderful performance of choral, wonderful choral music, the Chichester Psalms, as well as some other works. So it's a wide range. We have a wonderful organist coming in. We're working with Miller Auditorium and the NAEA Gospel Fest Choir to present incredible gospel music, both the choral music and then Take Six, whose a cappella vocal harmonies are just wonderful, wonderful to hear. So there's a wide variety of things. And also what's really nice is that it does bring the community together. If you look at the list of organizations involved, it's just, I couldn't even try and rattle them all off right now. But we have artwork that brings in Kalamazoo Public School students, and that gives us a whole new perspective. We're tying into people right now reflecting on the transformational power of the Kalamazoo Promise for the community and the children in the community. So one thing that I notice is working with all these different people, different faiths, when we come together to celebrate ourselves in our community, those conflicts that you mentioned earlier, they're not important, and we just don't run into them really.
No. So, well, we hope not.
Yeah.
But I was almost, maybe I'm getting into too deep water, but when you play that cello,
mm-hmm.
it isn't just about making music, I suspect.
No.
Why did you choose the cello?
Because my father played it.
Okay, mundane.
But well, not mundane. I heard it all my life.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
But, and I started on violin. The cello was what I wanted to play. But yeah, I think that Rohan would agree when you're playing it, it's almost like a form of meditation. It is a experience that takes you somewhere else. And when you're playing with other people, you're doing that with them, and that also sort of expands how you relate to people in the world.
Yes.
It's when I haven't played for a while, and then I get to sit down and play, no matter what it is, I feel calmer afterwards. I feel more connected.
You really have got something beyond the music. You've been connected.
Yeah.
I think really what's important to note is that when we practice or when we perform, we really also need to be cognizant of the tradition that's behind all of these art forms. And for example, the tradition that I'll be presenting on Sunday, November 11th, the music and dance collaboration, it has a history of nearly 2,000 years. So for me to just play an instrument or perform this music is not just an event taking place at a given time, but really it harks back those two millennia and all the evolution and revolution that took place during all of those years. And I think what's really wonderful about this festival is that it reveals how so many of these musical traditions have, in a sense, a spiritual history. For example, a lot of Western classical music originated in the churches.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly, Indian classical music essentially originated in the temples, the Hindu temples. And even the dance form that we'll be presenting on Sunday, November 11th, is essentially something that began in the temples. But since it developed as sort of a unique artistic entity, now we have another means of, perhaps a more accessible means of sharing this spiritual and cultural tradition with the rest of the world. And that's really, I think, one of the key missions of this festival.
Yes, we're getting close to this. The mission of the festival mm-hmm. is not just to entertain, it is to...
To represent diverse faiths through their music, bringing greater respect and understanding through sharing the treasured music of these traditions.
So we're not just reaching across the faiths, we're reaching across the centuries,
right.
mm-hmm.
and a sense of continuity with the people who taught this instrument in many, many years, 2,000
years, yeah.
years ago. The drum that you're going to play
yeah.
is not 2,000 years old, but
no.
it's been around
right.
for 2,000. Now, going back to the opening, which is at noon on Thursday
mm-hmm.
in the Kalamazoo Museum, the monks, the Tibetan Buddhist monks.
Mm-hmm.
Buddha, I think the first Buddha was born 600 BC?
Something around that time.
So we're going to be having, going back 2,500 years,
sure,
when we have that very first mm-hmm. opening ceremony. Mm-hmm. So we're covering the world in terms of music, the world including in terms of faiths, and we're covering 2,500 years in this festival that starts on
Thursday.
At noon.
Yeah.
In the free. We're not allowed on our program on Access. Mm-hmm. We can say anything. This is the home of free speech. Oh. We're not allowed to say tickets cost.
But we
can say tickets are available. We'll go to the website to find mm-hmm. them.
Okay.
But not every performance needs a ticket. The first performance
right.
of the monks is free.
Right.
The film that follows directly from the Fetzer Institute, again, is a, mm-hmm. a free occasion.
Yeah. Any of the events at the Kalamazoo Valley Museum are going to be free events. So our three documentary films, the Shakuhachi Japanese bamboo flute concert, and also, of course, watching the monks do their sand painting as well as their opening and closing ceremonies. Those are all free, as is the Shape Note Singing Workshop, Rohan's Workshop, the Breiner Lecture, where our organist will talk about the Northern German Lutheran tradition organist as preacher. And I'm sure there are more. We have an organ master class. So there's a lot of opportunities to see our artists in a free situation.
Yes, so yeah. there are free things,
yeah.
and there's mingling.
Mm-hmm.
A good time will be had by all, and a superb time will be had by many. We might mention the Gazette, yesterday's Gazette,
mm-hmm.
I thought did a very good job of talking
yes.
about
yes,
this festival. And there's a schedule there.
Mm-hmm.
I say schedule now that I'm an American, you see. I don't say schedule anymore.
Okay.
Schedule there, and people can look at yesterday's Gazette, or they can go to your website,
mm-hmm.
and they can choose the thing that really... There yep. will sometimes be some duplication.
Mm-hmm.
Am I right?
Oh, you mean...
It's not possible to see everything because some things take place
actually the,
at
the oh,
same
well,
time.
Our fringe events do conflict a little bit. Wednesday night, believe it or not, you have to decide between two fringe events, whether to hear Ellen Kushner in an author event at Kazoo Books or go and participate in the Shape Note Singing Workshop. And Saturday morning, we do have three free events happening. The Organ Masterclass, the documentary film on Yusuf Islam, the artist formerly known as Cat Stevens, and also Rohan's workshop. So there are three different things going on there, but that really is the only time you have to make a choice. All the other events, especially our ticketed ones, but everything else, it works in such a way that you can go from one to the next.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's go back to that first event, because we have supposedly first event.
Mm-hmm.
You lent me a DVD, and we've right. taken some still photographs from that,
mm-hmm.
showing the mandalas, and there's no sound with it, but maybe
mm-hmm.
we could talk a little bit about what we see on the screen as they flash past.
Mm-hmm.
If we can
mm-hmm.
ask Anthony out there to, or Bill, to roll that first tape showing the monks at work. That's a very brief shot.
Yes.
I believe there's the beginning work on
that'll be pretty near the completion, because
yes.
what they do first is lay out lines in which that they will be pouring the sand, and they actually lay it down almost grain by grain. What he's holding there is a little metal scoop, and by running a stick up and down it, the sand falls out grain by grain.
Grain by grain. Two
yeah.
pounds of sand, I believe, they bring with them.
Yeah, all I know is that when they dispose of that at the end, we will have less than a cup of sand.
Incredible.
Yeah, and it's a 6-foot diameter circle.
Circle. Here I think the monks are performing.
Well, this is, yeah, they're posing with their instruments. That's some of what you would see at Shenry Auditorium on Saturday night, but also... and there's dance involved. There's some incredible costumes involved with their dance.
Yes.
But those instruments will also be used in chanting, will occur during the opening and closing ceremonies of the sand painting as well.
Do you know what kind of instruments they use?
The name of the horn is Dungshin, I think.
Okay.
And there are some drums. They also are famous for multiphonic singing, where they're producing two and three in pitches at the same time with their own voices.
I heard them some years ago. They were in Kalamazoo. Mm-hmm. An amazing ability to use three of their vocal cords simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be, I hadn't realized, at the very beginning, mm-hmm. when they start to lay out the mandala,
there will be
some music as well at that.
Yes, there's chanting and playing of instruments. The ceremonies at the beginning and the end are between a half an hour and 45 minutes.
Yes. And they will be working throughout the festival on building that mandala.
Mm-hmm. The
first Buddha was born in India. Northern India, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Nepal, what we call Nepal now. And the wheel, the Buddhist wheel, which seems to feature in some of those mandalas, isn't that in the middle of the Indian flag?
Most likely.
I think there's still this link up. These are Tibetan Buddhist monks,
mm-hmm. right.
but they're not in Tibet now, of course.
Right.
They're in an Indian monastery.
Right. Their monastery is in exile in India.
Yes.
Yeah.
I can't pronounce the name of the, I've got it written down here, Drepung Loseling Monastery.
I've been calling it Drepung Loseling myself, but I don't know if I'm right.
But they're exiled Tibetan monks, mm-hmm. and they have an American offshoot somewhere down south.
Well, they have an office that manages their tour. The monks that will be coming, though, they're selected from the monastery in India, and they for their skills at the sand painting and at chanting and at dance and at the instruments. So they come in a tour group that is still being led by an elder monk who sees to their spiritual needs while they're here. So we're sort of in contact with them through an office in Atlanta, but these are our monks coming straight from Tibet. We've been given a sheet of a few phrases like hello and things like that, because probably one or two maybe will speak English. So they're really just on this excursion, and they'll go back to the monastery.
Mm. Well, let's move off. If you're not careful, I'm going to have you talking about the Buddha's faith for the rest of the evening, and we have all kinds of other things to cover. Thursday, that takes place down mm-hmm. there at the Public Museum. But then if we move on to the Congregational Church mm-hmm. at 3:30.
Right.
A very special person is performing, I believe.
Well, many special people are performing in that. But
you'll be part of that.
I will be playing with them. Capriccio is a flute and harp duo out of Chicago. And they pitched to me the idea of doing a program based on Hebraic themes. And there are a number of pieces on the program that are based on Hebraic themes. There's also a work for soprano, flute, harp, and cello based on the Diary of Anne Frank, which is a very, very powerful, wonderful piece. And that will be closing the program. And the singer in that happens to be a singer who does a lot of things with Music of the Broke and Lyric Opera in Chicago. And she lives in Minnesota now, but she is featured in the Fetzer film at The Mystery of Love, a film sponsored by the Fetzer, which will be shown at 1:00 that day. So you can go and see her in the film and find out what Mystery of Love was involved in her life, and then hear her sing this piece, The Diary of Anne Frank.
On celluloid and then live.
In person, yeah.
We should have mentioned, I mean, funding, some of the funding comes from, I think, originally Gilmore Foundation.
Oh, yeah.
Kalamazoo Foundation. Fetzer as
mm-hmm,
well.
Yeah, we, and
they're still involved, those three foundations?
Oh, yes. I to rattle off all of them, it would take a while. It's
the rest of the
hour. A very large list, and we do have them listed on our website. But
this is a good indication of the support in the community for what we're doing here.
Yeah.
This is something important we're involved in. This isn't just a let's entertain ourselves as the winter creeps in.
Right.
Are you going to play something from that Capriccio?
Yes, I'm playing as part of the concert. There's a flute and cello duos that we're doing, and they're canons. So what I can play for you is pretty much the whole piece, except of course the flute would be playing the same music at a different time, so it'd be more complicated sounding. There's more counterpoint, but the essential melodic elements I could play for you. And these are called Hebrew canons, and by a composer named whose last name is Lichter, is known mostly in film writing and television writing. But I'll just play you a little bit of a couple.
If you can leave your, Roger out there can cut that microphone, and you can, I'll take care of it while you slide across to the other microphone in the corner.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this performance. I've only heard Dr. Stard a couple of times. Most recently, we actually did a performance together of a concerto, a Mridangam concerto, for myself and string orchestra. So this is something that we performed at Kalamazoo College just a few months ago. But definitely looking forward to hearing her perform today.
So am I. Have you composed anything together? Have you done original music?
Some of these pieces are basically first of their kind collaborations for Indian percussion and string orchestra.
Yes. Are we all set? Can we...
I'll just play a little bit of one of these, two of these different Hebrew canons. This one is subtitled Once Upon a Time, and it's the only one the cello starts. So. And if you can imagine the flute doing something similar at the same time, they're really very, very wonderful contrapuntal pieces. There's a far more lively one that it ends with that's called Klezmer Canon.
Indeed. You said the second one was a Klezmer canon, and I think I could recognize that rhythm at least. Thank you very much.
It's really a lot of fun playing with this flutist. She's done these with a number of other cellists, and she says she's really enjoying how I'm getting more into the spirit, that I like the glissandi and I like to do
She's
these.
She's converting you.
Oh, she doesn't need to convert me. I'm enjoying it. It's fun, some of the things you can do on a string instrument, and sometimes we're afraid to really go in for those little inflections, but it's a lot
of fun. Just occurred to me, you're learning another language.
Mm-hmm.
It's like learning French and then switching to Swedish, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd never thought about that. As you move into the music of another faith, you're actually moving into another kind of language.
Right. That's a really interesting point, Keith, because in the performance that I'm coordinating on November 11th, Sunday, November 11th.
Keep saying the date.
Sure. Sunday, November 11th at 1:30.
1 o'clock in the...
St. Luke's Church.
Yep, St. Luke's in downtown. We will be featuring a violinist, Shruti Iyer from Philadelphia. Actually, All three of the other artists are from Philadelphia, including myself, and they include Kirunavali Vidyashankar, who's the vocalist, Shruti Iyer, who's the violinist, and Shobha Narayanan, who's the dancer. So in this performance, we are going to be featuring a violinist who has learned Indian classical violin in addition to Western classical violin. So it's really interesting. I think our audience will really enjoy seeing how the violin has been adapted to Indian music.
Yes.
And in fact, it's been around in Indian music for almost 150 years. And the playing style and the techniques are considerably different from the Western classical tradition. And I think it'll really be nice to see how the same instrument is being dealt with by a different musical mm-hmm. tradition.
Mm-hmm. I certainly plan to be at that performance at 1 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. November 11th.
November 11th.
At St. Luke's.
At St. Luke's Church. Mm-hmm. The Baptist Church, we've mentioned mm-hmm. them, that's where it all started.
Yes.
But again on Thursday the 8th, 7:30, Messiaen, you have mm-hmm. that wonderful deep quartet that he composed in a prison camp.
Yes. It's
an amazing story in itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a wonderful piece, and I've written about 10 pages on it, so I won't talk about it too much, but it's...
So the notes, there will be notes for people to read out the...
I cut it down to much less. But there is so much in the piece, and it's regarded as one of the masterworks of the 20th century, just as a piece of music. And then when you look at the spiritual significance of the piece, that this is all based on this one man's incredible faith. He based it on the Book of Revelations, and there are a lot of elements in it, the fact that he saw colors in music and actually composed to the colors that he saw in his mind as he heard different notes. Also using birdsong as the symbol of freedom, of our striving for higher spiritual planes. And of course we have incredible people performing it. We have artists in residence from the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra performing with Raymond Harvey on the piano. So it's going to be a wonderful performance. And it's also working as a concert to bring together multi-faith musical reflections from our other artists. So you actually will get a sampling of some of our other artists that night. Yale Strom will represent Judaism, Dawood Warnsby, Islam, Michael Chikuzin Gould will play the Shakuhachi representing Buddhism, and David Schrader, who is our Briner Lectureship collaborative artist, he's an organist, he'll speak on Christianity. And all of this will be moderated by Ellen Kushner, who is a public radio personality. Her program, Sound and Spirit, is very popular.
We've written notes. Will the maestro say anything about the story of the prison camp?
I mean, I know that someone will speak about that, but certainly that is somewhat in my program notes. And there is a wonderful book out by the author. I think her name is Rishin, who interviewed all the people involved who were still alive about 8 years ago, and it's just an incredible book that lets you know what it was like to be performing it, what the subsequent performances were like, the lives of these musicians who happened to be in this POW camp. It's a really, really interesting book. And also the perspective of Messiaen, you know, talking to Messiaen's wife and finding out his views on the piece. So that I assume that someone from the group is going to talk a little bit about that.
It's a powerful story.
Yeah. But we do, of course, want to make sure it's clear that this is primarily a musical event. The reflections by Dawood and David and Michael and Yale are going to be a little bit of speaking, but then a lot of music in these elements. And also, I should point out that the program starts with a really interesting piece that's being performed by percussionist Greg Secor. And it's about, actually based on a person's image of a self-immolating Buddhist monk, the images we saw in the early 1960s in Vietnam. And that was this monk's way of protesting religious persecution.
Yes.
And the piece is called A Robe of Orange Flame. and he speaks of taking on this robe in order to be noticed.
A feast.
Yeah,
it's coming up. Television sometimes makes me want to weep. Mm-hmm. Only once have I cried in front of a television set, and that was late at night years ago in England. Mm. Pablo Casals was given the United Nations Medal of Freedom. Mm. And he stood there, took the medal, and then said, "I have not performed in public," of course, against fascism. "I have not performed in public for the past 40 years, but tonight I would like to play." Mm. And he took his cello, and he played a little Basque piece about the bird of freedom.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And you're talking about the bird of freedom. Mm-hmm. Now we're going back 40 years, about 2,500 years. I have to butt in for just a moment. Because remember, one of the aims of this program, Monday Night Live, is to say all the good things we have going in Kalamazoo. Mm-hmm. We have a competing festival, the Russian Festival.
That's true.
Comes to town, and I think I should mention the fact that that will be on Friday the 9th. There'll be a gala concert, I believe, in the Dalton Center.
Okay.
And that ticket would get you into the festival at the Fetzer Center on the Saturday. So there's another show in town
as well.
Yeah. But I think perhaps different audiences.
Yeah.
Everybody will have.
And I had dinner the other day with some of those folks, and we were talking about how perhaps they might want to be in nicer weather, so a little bit earlier on.
Nicer weather,
next time.
A group from the Washington, the Russian Culture Center is coming into town as well. It's quite an important event.
Oh, sure.
We have a lot of good things in this community.
That's true.
I would like to show a little Roland that you provided of a rehearsal. I don't know if it was a rehearsal for the performance that will be on
it
the
is.
11th.
Yeah, correct. This is some rehearsal footage for our upcoming performance on Sunday, November 11th, our performance at 1 o'clock at St. Luke's.
Okay.
And this was taken a couple of months ago when I went to Philadelphia for a rehearsal for this program with the other musicians and the dancer.
So these are the actual musicians who will be the violinist,
vocalist,
yourself on the...
Murdungam.
Murdungam, thank you for saying it.
Vocalist and dancer. So this is, I believe this is probably the first piece that we'll be presenting in our performance.
So while if Terence or Roger or Bill have got the Roland of the...
Ensemble,
the rehearsal for this performance. Mm-hmm. While it is playing, you could maybe move over to your Rangam and do it live.
Sure.
Finished the extract, the rehearsal in Philadelphia, and now if we can come right in on you, Rohan, you might want to tell us just a little bit about the drum itself.
Sure, hopefully one of these mics is picking up my voice. But this is the mridangam, and this is a 2,000-year-old South Indian drum, pitched drum. It basically has three major parts to it. We have two playing surfaces that are played with the fingers and wrists of both hands, and they're fastened to a central wooden shell.
The instrument that we have here is actually something that I sort of re-engineered. This isn't the traditional design, but this is something that tends to be a lot more user-friendly and durable than the traditional design. And I've been using this for performances for about the past 2 years. So we're playing a short improvisational piece in a beat cycle known as Oggy Fella. So this is, I should give you some idea of what this instrument sounds like.
Thank you very much indeed. If you could come back to the table, and you said something that I think I understood. You said you'd re-engineered the drum.
That's correct.
You said it was tunable. Was that mm-hmm. the phrase you used?
Pitched.
Pitched.
What that basically means is the instrument has this tonal or pitch pitched element to it. It can produce a pitch, and that's quite unique for a percussion instrument because most percussion instruments don't have the ability to produce these distinct pitches. And what allows for this tonal production is a really ingenious fixture on the tonal head of the instrument, which you probably caught in the video footage of the demonstration. So that is made of an iron oxide and starch mixture, that black disc. It's made up of about 40 layers of this material, and it allows for the production of these harmonic overtones, or basically pitches. So with this new design, tuning the instrument is a lot easier, and repairing the instrument's a lot easier.
I've got to be careful, because one of the treasures of this community is Western Michigan University, as well as Kalamazoo College. We hear the marching band practicing its drums every evening from our home. Mm-hmm. Not quite as subtle as this. It's
you're right.
Invigorating, but you can really play this.
Right. Yeah, it's you're right. It's not as voluminous as a lot of Western percussion is in that sense. It's since it's played with the hands, obviously, it can't be as loud as something that's played with a large stick.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there are a lot of nuances and a lot of intricacies that
yes.
that are quite characteristic of this drum.
And you've been playing that instrument or one like it since you were 8 years old.
Yeah, about the past 10 years. Yeah.
How long does it take an ordinary person to can an ordinary person master it?
I think everyone has the potential to. They just have to find whatever system works for them, and obviously. How long it takes for an individual to reach a performance level, I assume, is the question. That really depends on the individual and what the individual considers performance level.
Yes. So this is a gifted person here. Mm-hmm. The Buddha in each of us.
Yeah.
Even though this is a Hindu instrument,
right. As you mentioned,
in the temple.
Yeah, Buddhism itself originated in India. So
yes. Thank you very much.
Sure.
All kinds of good things. We have just about 5 minutes. So we have to be selective. I looked at the other things that were coming along, and David Schrader came to mind. I heard him play on the harpsichord
at
the previous Gilmore Festival.
Right.
Played the Goldberg Variations. Mm-hmm. Amazing.
He is an amazing musician.
And musician.
And plays all keyboards. He plays clavichord, organ, piano, and he plays all types of music. He's certainly involved with early music groups, but he plays a lot of contemporary music. As a matter of fact, that's where I first met him, was performing with contemporary chamber players at the University of Chicago, Ralph Shapey's old group. And he was the piano player at the time that was playing with them in ensembles, and I was playing cello with him. And he has been here and been featured on the Gilmore at least once, and I think he did 5 concerts that festival.
Yes.
And he will be performing on St. Luke's organ on Friday at 3:30, and he will be also doing the Briner lecture at First Presbyterian Church. So he'll be talking about, as I mentioned earlier, the North German Lutheran tradition, organist as preacher, and playing, of course, examples to go along with that.
Yes.
He'll also be in First Presbyterian's worship service Sunday morning. So there are definitely chances to catch him for free in those two venues. And also he'll be teaching a master class with members of the Southwest Michigan American Guild of Organists at First Methodist Church Saturday morning.
First Methodist Church Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be clear on this now. You don't just walk in and say, teach me the organ.
No.
The people he'll be criticizing, listening to, mm-hmm. are organists.
Yes.
But the public is welcome to sit in the pews and listen to these people take it.
Yeah, well, I think he will not be critical. He will be helpful.
Yes, I'm
but
sure.
But he will... they have prepared pieces for him, and he will hear them and make suggestions as to how to, you know, get more out of their...
What piece. I'm amazed with, Don Upshaw did a masterclass. Yo-Yo Ma did a masterclass some years ago. The generosity of these people who have mastered their instrument in teaching and critiquing people who haven't quite reached that level yet.
Right.
The generosity, the love for a fellow musician, somebody who cared enough to put in the hours and hours of... Have you ever worked out how many hours of practice you put in?
No.
I heard that if you look at the music schools in Berlin, there are 2 conservatoires, and the next one. And to get into this one, it's a question of hours. By the time you can get into the lower level, you've done something like 18,000 hours of practice.
Mm.
To get into the next one, it's 50% more than that. I mean, hours practicing and ability later on go together.
Yeah.
Hard work goes behind all this.
Yeah.
Now, the mechanics of putting together a festival. Sounds as if you know these people. This is where I first met him, you say, in Chicago.
Yeah.
So are you one of the people who will pick up a phone and say, could you come this week in November to Kalamazoo?
Oh, yeah. I am, for the most part, I'm the person who made those calls or emails. And some of them are indeed people I know, but there are a number of people that I don't know. Certainly the first thing I lined up, because people were asking about Tibetan monks, were Tibetan monks. And I had known of a group performing in Elgin, Illinois a few years ago. I saw their information, and so I contacted them. The Shakuhachi performer, Michael Gould, I found him actually initially online, just Googling Michigan Shakuhachi and Buddhism, and that's who I found. But he has wonderful credentials. And Rohan, I'm lucky enough to know him. I've